Hi, today is July 8th, 2017. This is Love Views Podcast number 212, the Experimenters Edition. And a couple of things. I'm Todd Agassawar, my good friend John Westwell. A couple of things. Thank you to Rogue Amoeba. It looks like their suggestion worked just fine last time. They recorded, now it being Audio Hijack, no Pro anymore, Audio Hijack 3, recorded just fine, and I didn't hear myself in my earbuds, so I'm happy. And it actually recorded John's side of conversation, or otherwise it would have sounded really weird, so that worked out too.
You mean people aren't used to you just talking to yourself?
Well, they are, especially my family, but, you know.
Yeah, I might just be the voice in your head. We haven't figured that out for sure.
Yeah, you might not be real. I haven't seen you in person in 10 years now?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Maybe not 10, but a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
At any rate, here we are. First, before we get into the experimental section, just wanted to note something John and I mentioned last year during the Samsung Note 7 catch on fire debacle. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And John and I think both kind of agreed, you know, Samsung Electronics is kind of a big company. And this is not going to do them any good, but it probably is not going to, like, destroy them. And sure enough, Reuters reported the other day that Samsung's second quarter operating profits rose 72% year over year, setting a new record, beating analyst estimates as strong memory chip prices helped them widen margins. In other words, like we said, they do more than phones. They do a lot. I think they do refrigerators and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, a little bit of everything. I mean, if you're holding a piece of electronic, anything, you probably got something Samsung had something to do with.
Yeah, including an iPhone. I think they make the displays or something like that. So, So Samsung, don't worry about them. They apparently are doing just fine. Despite
not the best thing to have happen to them, but not killer by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Okay, so next up is I return to a topic last week. So last week, John was the sole owner in this podcast of a brand spanking new 10.5-inch iPad Pro. I just received one, and so naturally I had to go read more reviews now that I actually have one.
Now that you care about what the reviews say.
Now that I care, found a good one at iMore, which I will post to the show notes. You know, and John, I kind of grilled John last week a little bit since I was expecting mine to come in. And I got some good opinions, or interesting opinions from John. I don't know if they're good opinions, but they're interesting to me anyway. and a couple of things that struck me, you know. So John, I think, did not buy a smart keyboard cover, or did you?
I did.
You did. And you bought the sleeve, the really expensive sleeve.
Yeah.
Okay, so being poor, I didn't buy any of those.
And I bought something else this week, but I'll tell you about that when we get to my iPad story of the week.
Okay. So I didn't buy the Apple Smart Keyboard because I'm kind of disappointed with the one for the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. Not that it doesn't work. It works fine. You know, functionally, it's fine. That's not a problem. The problem is it is the wear and tear on a $160 accessory after 16 months seems excessive to me. I mean, I'll probably post a photo or something of it so folks can see what I'm talking about. But it is framed like you would not believe. And I was kind of afraid of that when I first got it because none of my iPad covers have really lasted very long. But I figured a $160 keyboard cover might be built a little bit more sturdily, I guess is the word, or sturdy. That wasn't the case. Okay, so then my next plan was I had read about Logitech Slim Combo detachable keyboard for the 10.5. I think it's called the Logitech Slim Combo with detachable keyboard. And it's about $130, so a little bit cheaper. But when I went to order it, I noticed it had a 3 to 4 week shipping time. So I said, I need something now. I need a cover or something now. So I'll think about that some more. Then I started reading reviews on it, and apparently this thing's a tank. It makes the iPad Pro 10.5 almost as thick and heavy as a MacBook Air. So I said, well, if I wanted to carry something as thick and heavy as MacBook Air, oh, look, I have a MacBook Air.
Yeah.
I could actually carry that.
And it's ironic that we refer to a MacBook Air as thick and heavy.
That's right. Well, everything's but, relative in the world. Right?
Yep, very true, very true.
And so I said, well, maybe that's not what I want, you know? Oh, and I should also, not only is it 3 to 4 week shipping from Apple, but when I went to the local store, they didn't have anything. They didn't have anything. I don't even think they had covers for the, they had the slip cover, that expensive sleeve you bought, but they didn't have like a detachable cover. The normal one that costs 40 or 50 bucks. At any rate, so I rethought about what I'm actually going to do with my new iPad Pro, what I did with my old one also. And my conclusion is this. I actually did use the keyboard, the smart keyboard for the 9.7 quite a bit after getting it. And I felt it was very useful. I think it was one of my favorite accessories for the iPad for a long time. It still is, really. But the truth is, or maybe that's not the truth, but the situation is that since getting my Samsung Chromebook Plus, when I need something with a keyboard, that's what I plop up. And in fact, because it's instant on, I just have it sitting around on a table all the time. And, I hit the keyboard and boom, I'm up and running. So, it's got a 13.3-inch display, so it's, a larger display, easy to read. For my particular use case, it's actually a better device for, that occasional email or, 10-minute bit of research on something. So I don't think I'm going to get a keyboard cover for my new iPad Pro. I ordered a cheap $14 or $15 cover with a magnetic clasp, that sleeps the screen from Amazon. Yep. We'll see how that works. And if that doesn't work, I'll just go order the regular cover for the iPad. So I don't have the solution you have yet because I didn't want to spend that much money.
Well, so my solution with the 10.5, and I'll talk a little bit more about my iPad revolution, as I've called it. But I did get a back cover from Amazon, like just basically a snap-on piece of plastic. That was $7.99 on Amazon. It fits like a glove, so I'm very happy with that. But I realized this week that if I wanted to use the iPad Pro more around the house, I don't need the keyboard as much there. That's so true. What I now am doing is in my bag that I take to work every day, I've got the sleeve and I've got the keyboard cover in there. And then when the iPad is in home mode, I actually did buy the smart cover from Apple this morning, actually, so that I can just have that around the house. And then when I go to work, pop off the smart cover, put on the keyboard cover, and kind of convert it to work mode that way. So that's what I'm going to try to go with and see how that works out. But I did use the iPad Pro keyboard and the 10.5 at work last week here and there. So we have a student planner that we give out to all of our incoming freshmen. And I have a proof version of it. So I actually carried a paper version of it last year. Because occasionally I have to reference it. Yeah, I know. So very novel. But this year I actually have a proof version, a full PDF proof of it. So I just threw that into Note Shelf, the app on iPad that lets you take notes and things like that. And you can mark up PDFs. So I figure that's just going to be my planner this year is the iPad Pro to get one more thing out of my bag since I put something in my bag now that I'm carrying the iPad Pro and the Surface Pro.
Yeah.
So that is sort of where I'm at right now. I'm kind of happy with my iPad Pro 10.5. I really love the screen. I've been just enjoying it this week.
That reminds me, I don't know what to call the iPad Pro 10.5, which is a heck of a lot of words to say. Yeah, I was calling the 9.7 iPad Pro Junior or iPad. Yeah, iPad Pro Junior, which is fewer syllables, easier to say. But this is kind of bigger than Junior, which I guess is okay. iPad Pro the third? I don't know. That doesn't sound right.
iPad Pro the middle child.
The middle child. Okay. We need to think of a famous middle child and name it after that person.
Jan Brady.
Jan Brady. iPad Pro Jan. Jan version. That's pretty funny. So what I spent a bit of money too, but not as much as you. So I bought the so Duet Display is on sale in the App Store right now. It's $10, mm-hmm. $9.99. It's normally I think $19.99, so it's half price. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I've always wanted to try it, and I wanted to recommend something for my daughter to use too, so she can have dual screens when she goes back to school. Yep. And so I said, well, I'll buy it first. We have separate iTunes accounts, so she had to buy it separately, but that's okay. I just gave her a gift card to replenish her iTunes account.
I'm surprised you don't have a family set.
You know, yeah. So the family plan came out after she went to college. And so she already had her own account, and I, you know, I didn't know how to merge her songs and, you know, her previous purchases and stuff. And so I said, well, you know, you're essentially an adult at this point now, you know, in her life.
You might want to look into it. I mean, I have it with my wife. Mm-hmm. We're both on a family, and the purchases and everything are kept separate. But if I want to download something that she's purchased, I can go in and grab it. And if she wants to download something that I purchased, you can basically go and choose.
But did you have separate accounts prior to that family plan?
Yep.
And was it able to merge everything?
Yep.
Okay, well, we'll consider it then.
The only thing is that it has to be on one billing credit card.
That's fine. It can be on mine. That's okay.
Yeah, so that works well for my wife and I. But yeah, I've been very happy with that. I guess it's been about 2 years now that Apple's had that ability.
Well, at some point in her life, I'd like my daughter to pay for her own iTunes stuff.
You know, it's funny you speak of that. When my wife and I were growing up, we grew up a little bit later than you did, and we were right on the edge of the cell phone kind of mass. Everyone had a cell phone right around 2000, 2001. So when we got our cell phone, we got our own plans and our own cell phones and all of that. My brother-in-laws, who are about 4 or 5 years younger than my wife, they all were on their parents' family plan at some point in their life.
Which didn't exist prior to that, probably.
Yeah, yeah, they might still be on there. But, you know, I got my cell phone before my parents got theirs, so I couldn't be on a family plan, or else I would have been the family. Yeah. But the funny thing is, a few years ago, we were having a conversation with my in-laws about, you know, people growing up and, you know, millennials living at home and blah, blah, blah. And I said something about family plans, and they looked at my wife and they go, well, you were on the family plan. And I said, no, she never was on your family plan. Well, yes, she was. All the kids were. And so I had to give them the timeline.
Yeah.
How easy it is to forget that the stuff that we take for granted that, oh, the kids are just on the family plan was only a recent thing and not a historical thing.
Yeah, so someday I'd like her to pay her own phone bill and, you know, things like that. Not
she
quite
will.
That. Not quite.
She'll get there.
A couple more years. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I bought Duet Display for $9.99, and the first thing I plugged it into was Surface Pro 4, actually.
As I have done with Duet.
And I did it because I said, I didn't realize it supported Windows PCs. I always thought it was Mac only. And so I plugged it in. It worked fine. There are some display resizing things, but, you know, Windows 10 has display resizing things in general. Mm-hmm. So it didn't bother me. And it basically, the fonts were, in fact, a little too large, but, you know, large enough to read. So, again, no complaints. And I said, this is great. And it was fast. There's no latency, you know, all that kind of good stuff. Well, you know, I've got an i7 Surface Pro 4. It's a pretty fast little guy. And I assume the graphics, I don't even know what kind of graphics chip it has in there, but I assume, you know, it's probably not game player level, but it's pretty decent. So then I came home. I did this while I was at work. I came home and I installed the Duet Display for OS. Well, I guess Mac OS now, not OS 10. For Mac OS, and I plugged in my iPad Pro into the. It's a 2010 MacBook Air. It's an old device, right? It is 7 years old, 8 years old, almost 8 years old. And it's kind of sluggish. And I think it's because the MacBook Air is old and sluggish. I think it's probably a Core Duo or something like that.
Well, I will give you my experience with this. So before Duet, there was a piece of software out there that was Air Display. It was the previous way to do this. Right. And I had used that with my MacBook Air, my 2011 MacBook Air. And it was always a little sluggish.
Right, and that's because it was doing it wirelessly, right? Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or something. I forget what.
Duet does it through cable.
Right.
And I have used Duet on both the MacBook Pro and the Surface Pro, and I do find the experience better on the Surface Pro.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think it's just, it must be an issue with the driver. Maybe the Windows driver is a little quicker. But I think it's a really killer setup. Yeah, I know. It's a really killer setup if you've got a iPad Pro and a Surface Pro to be able to go to like a coffee shop and pop down and have dual displays with just your two tablets.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cool little thing to be able to do. So I highly recommend it if you've never done it. If nothing else, just to freak out the people around you.
Yeah. And it works really well for a number of situations. And, you know, my daughter's never used dual screens, believe it or not. So I was just trying to talk to her about how that works. We still, you know, she's downloaded the app, but we haven't set up her MacBook yet. And her new MacBook is coming in soon, so we'll have to reset it up again once that comes in. And I hope it works with Parallels running Windows, because that's what she's going to have to do. Her program requires you run Office 365 for Windows, or on Windows, not the Mac version, which is kind of interesting. I suspect it's because of the Excel add-ons and lack of macros on the Mac version. But at any rate, in any case, so it's not optimal on my MacBook Air. I'm hoping when I inherit my daughter's 2013 MacBook Air in a couple of weeks that it will be a better experience, because it'll be a faster processor and I hope a faster graphics chip or a better graphics chip. So what kind of, are you running on your new MacBook Pro? Is that where you're using Duet?
I have, on the new MacBook Pro, which is a 2015. Sluggish. A little sluggish, more sluggish than I would expect, so.
Yeah. But still, for static stuff, like right now, the way I have it set up is I have John on a Skype video on the main MacBook Air screen, and I've got our show notes over on the iPad Pro display, and it looks good. At first, the fonts are really tiny, and I couldn't read it, and I tried to, you know, use the iPad gestures to expand it, and then I created a second screen, and I don't know. But now it's fine. I'm just old and cranky. Okay, speaking of old and cranky, not really cranky, but it was surprising, is that, you know, I've been using Procreate for my daily doodles that I keep talking about. Mm-hmm. One doodle a day since January 1st, 2017.
Which I showed off some of yours to a friend this week.
Oh,
and nice. She was very impressed with the rabbits as Captain America and Rabbit Woman.
But anyway, Procreate is my favorite drawing app. I've tried several, including Sketches or something, which is okay. But so the first thing I did was pair the Apple Pencil with the new iPad Pro 10.5, run
which
Procreate.
Which is extremely easy to do if people have ever wondered about it. Just plug it in and
it's paired. That's it. It says, do you want a pair? And yes. And you're done. And it's charging while you do that too. So, you know, double bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of comments on it. First, I read about the something motion, whatever thing is on the new iPad Pro 10.5 and the higher res and the lower latency and all that. I didn't expect such a huge qualitative difference in the experience of just drawing a line on a screen. But I got to tell you, having drawn every day since January 1st, for at least 15, well, no more than 15 minutes, I should say. That's my doodle time limit. For no more than 15 minutes a day. But I've done it every day, so you know it's 187 times or whatever now. It is qualitatively different experience to drag Apple Pencil across a screen and draw a line. And it's a better experience. It feels really smooth and really fast. And, you know, I was never one to complain about, you know, the alleged lagginess or latency of using Apple Pencil on an iPad Pro 9.7. Quite frankly, I didn't experience. Maybe it's because I'm not an artist or something. You know, I'm just literally just doodling my little drawings for 15 minutes a day. But it is a better, qualitatively different experience. That said, there are some changes I can't figure out. Like the blending tool doesn't work the way I expect it anymore. Blending is, you know, you have like, black and gray, and you want to kind of blend the area in between so there's a nice shade gradient coming down. I guess you could do it automatically, but I don't like doing it that way. Mm-hmm. And doesn't work the way I thought it, or the way I think it works on my older device. So it might just be I did something wrong, like I was on the wrong layer or something like that, but it just seemed different. But I've only used Procreate twice on it for 30 minutes. Actually, less than that, because my first doodle was like 5 minutes. But, you know, so I've used it like 25 minutes on, and that's a self-imposed limit. It's a long story why, but, you know, I think I'll get used to it. I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out, because Procreate's such a great tool. Apparently, they're going to have a major update coming with iOS 11, so I'll have to relearn it again. But so far, I really like it, and I have to say, the iPad, I bought it, the 10.5, primarily because my 9.7 iPad Pro only has 32 gigs of RAM, and I was kind of running out of space after I started drawing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought the 256 gig version, mostly for the space, and I knew that it had a faster processor and lower latency and blah, 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 but boy, I did not expect the qualitative difference I'm seeing, not just in Procreate, but everything. It's like, the 9.7 is not a slow machine.
Nope.
Anybody who calls it slow is nuts, in my opinion. But the 10.5 is really fast.
Comparatively. Yeah, I've had the same experience. So I kind of put in our show notes that I had the iPad revolution in my home this week. So to give you background, I have owned an iPad since the original iPad. And then I upgraded to the iPad 2. And then as soon as the iPad mini came out, as soon as it was announced, I picked up the first-gen iPad mini.
Right.
And so for the last 5 or 6 years, my life has been full-size iPad that gets a fair amount of use, but mm-hmm. not always a lot. iPad mini that gets daily use.
Yep.
And iPhone.
Yep.
And then when the iPad Pro 12.9 came out, I picked that up. And so up until about a month ago, I had three iPads
in
and
use.
An iPhone. Yeah, so four iOS devices. And also, up until about 6 months ago, when my office was kind of torn up for renovation, I also had three MacBooks running regularly. But anyway, so I've been thinking I should really simplify this. This is getting a little crazy. So I sold the 12.9 iPad Pro and ordered the 10.5 because I wanted to be able to keep using the Apple Pencil and get the Apple keyboard. And then I started looking at the iPad Air 2, and I thought, well, there's really no reason to have a 10.5 iPad Pro and an iPad Air 2. And then I started looking at the iPad Mini 3, which was what I had upgraded the iPad Mini to a few years ago in 2014. And it was okay, but it's running kind of sluggish, and the home button is starting to get a little bit hard to push. Like, it's you can tell it's wearing because it's been used every single day its whole life. So I made the radical decision yesterday. Carrie and I, my wife, went down to Jackson, Mississippi yesterday and went to the only Apple store in Mississippi, which is in Jackson.
Wait a minute, say that again? There's only one Apple store in the whole state?
Yes, there's only one Apple store in Mississippi, and it's at Ridgeland, which is a suburb of Jackson.
Wow.
So we were there yesterday. I could send you a picture of it. You can see what the only Apple store in Mississippi looks like. And I was kind of thinking about, my integrated life and how I use my iPhone for a heck of a lot more things than I ever used to, because every year iOS adds more and more so I can get away with doing more and more little incremental things on my phone instead of having to use a tablet or a PC or Mac. And I thought, I don't need all these iPads. They're kind of taking up space. I have to keep them updated, keep them charged, et cetera.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I put the iPad Mini 3 on eBay.
What?
And I put the iPad Air 2 on eBay, and then a friend of mine said, oh, no, I'll buy it. So before it even got a bid on eBay, it went to one of my friends. And so, yes. So now I am just using the iPad Pro and the iPhone and my MacBook and the Surface Pro.
I don't know if you heard me sigh just now, but I feel like I'm listening to a grown-up version of Toy Story, and Jesse, wow. Yeah.
You are mourning the fact that I'm not using an iPad mini.
Yeah. Which I use mine every day, but that's what I carry every day.
So here's my plan. I did. So last night was the first night reading in bed. I used the iPad Pro instead of the iPad Mini.
And it was too big.
It was big, but I don't. It hasn't reached me as too big yet.
Yet, okay.
However,
wait till you fall asleep and hit your head.
Well, yeah, that's true. If it does hit me as too big at some point, or literally hit me,
yeah,
then I reserve the right to buy an iPad Mini 4.
Yeah, I think.
And
so.
If an iPad Mini 5 comes out, it's going to be real hard for me to decide if I want to get it or not.
iPad Mini Pro, that's what we want.
Yeah, it would be cool to be able to use my Apple Pencil.
Yeah, absolutely.
On it. Yeah, an iPad Mini Pro would be awesome. So, but yeah, that's where I'm at, and I realize that it's sad for iPad Mini lovers, but it's such an uncertain future product right now that it sort of was like, well, I'm pretty sure I can just use the iPad Pro, the iPhone, my MacBook, and my Surface Pro.
Yeah, you know,
Good comprehensive computing solution.
Yeah, I think you're right. It makes a lot of sense. Kind of declutters your gadget bag and makes a lot of sense to me. You know, it's interesting. I'm refreshing my daughter's gadget lineup. She just graduated from college, heading to grad school. And so just replaced her iPad 3, which was, you know, never really called the 3. As you might call it, the one after the iPad 2 was just called the iPad. Which confuses the heck out of everybody.
The new iPad, right.
So I replaced her old new iPad.
And then there were two versions of the new iPad.
That's right.
The 30-pin, and then less than half a year later, the Lightning connector new iPad.
Yeah, she had the 30-pin.
Okay, I had that at 1.2.
Yeah.
Yep.
So she used that for 4 years, and I said, hey, look, the iPad Pro, and so, you know, full-size iPad, right? So I said, look, the iPad Pro 10.5 just came out. I'm going to get one. Do you want one, too? And she goes, I hardly use the iPad. I don't think I need it. I said, listen, you're going to go to grad school. You're going to need something to carry around. You can't just be lugging your MacBook everywhere.
Listen, kid. Listen to your dad.
In my day, you know, those stone chisels and those big stone tablets, they were heavy. I know what it's like to carry heavy stuff.
I didn't have an iPad. I had an A-pad.
Yeah, that's right, you know? And you think granite is easy to carry and chisel? No. But anyway, I said, okay, how about an iPad Mini? And I pulled out my iPad Mini to let her play with it. And she said, yeah, this seems okay. So I said, okay, fine. And, you know, I was, even though I already knew it, I was so disappointed. The only thing I could buy was an iPad Mini 4. And get this, there is only one model of iPad Mini 4 now. If you want an iPad Mini 4, it's an iPad Mini 4, 128 gigs, which is fine, no problems, but that is it. What color would you like it in? Yeah, so, and if you only had iPad Mini Pro with Apple Pencil support, that'd be so perfect to send her off to grad school with.
It would be.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll have to see.
Yeah.
Yep.
But in any case... So, okay, so you're down to one.
I'm down to one. And this actually, talking about simplifying, this actually brings up a hidden gem that I put in our show notes that I don't think we've ever discussed on here.
Okay.
But if you are a person that has a few different iOS devices, a few different Mac devices, maybe you have a family with some iOS devices in there, et cetera.
Right.
You really should take a look, especially if your home server is already a Mac. You know, I use my home server as a Mac so I can do iTunes home sharing and a few other things. Mac OS server, which costs $20 on the App Store. So any Mac can become the server for $20. One time fee. Major releases, I think they charge again. But if you're an Apple developer, you get it bundled with your developer account.
Yeah.
Has what's called Profile Manager in it, which is basically the mobile device management or MDM solution for Apple devices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, I wouldn't say this is beginner level, but if you're an intermediate geeky, techie kind of person, if you're used to setting up some things, this is not a bad solution to set up and then use to manage your iOS devices. And I'll give you an example. When I get a new iOS device, I can navigate to my server and enroll it on the server, which takes about 2 minutes. You just log in with your server username and password. You download the profile. It installs it. And then a lot of my customized settings come with it. The VPN connection to my home network comes with it. The file sharing off of the Apple, off the macOS server comes with it, so I can access all my file shares. Plus, I have the ability to remotely control and wipe and all those things that might happen. If you're a parent, you could use this to push down things like disabling camera, disabling iTunes purchases. You could do very mean things to your children's iOS devices if you had this set up that way. It's an option I don't think, like I said, we've ever talked about,
no,
but it is
never.
Really a cheap thing to set up. It's only $20. And if you're a geek and you already have, you know, your home server kind of connected through, say, a dynamic DNS address, I use DuckDNS for that. You've already got pretty much the whole setup.
And what are you running it on?
It's running on my ancient Mac Mini.
Wow. So you don't need a new piece of hardware to run this.
Nope. It's running on a 10-year-old Mac Mini.
Wow. So that, what is that? A Core Duo?
Well, a 2010 Mac Mini. Yep.
Okay.
Core Duo.
Wow. So basically, like my, and I have a 2010 MacBook Air, so pretty much the same. Yeah. Same everything.
Yep.
Except you probably have a real hard drive instead of a SSD.
Yeah, I have two real hard drives in there.
Yeah.
Because it was actually the Mac Mini server when I got it, back when they had the server distinction.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
So, yeah, that's my my little pro tip if you are interested in it. Just like, you know, it's kind of the beginner level of controlling an iOS device is just knowing how to set parental controls.
Right.
But you physically have to have the device there. This, if you're a parent and, you know, you tell your child, hey, you have to be home at 10 o'clock and they're not home at 10 o'clock, you can just remotely turn off their camera, remotely turn off features.
Try having fun now.
Lock it and require, you know, a PIN code to unlock it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could do some really evil things remotely through this. And if your child lost their device or someone in your family lost their device, you could remotely wipe it and things like that. So it's kind of a nice thing to have the option for.
Right. And as a reminder, even if you don't have a spare Mac or whatever on which to run macOS Server, you can go to iCloud.com and do remote wipes and ring your phone and all remotely. So, and find it all.
And I will, going back to something we mentioned earlier, if you have a family setup in iTunes or Apple ID, when you log in, you will see your other family members' devices on Find My iPhone. So that's been something that you might find useful adding your family into an Apple family setup, is that if your daughter misplaces her iPhone or something like that, you can see, without having to log into her Apple ID and all that, you'll see it in Find My iPhone because it's all under one account. So.
And you have one more tip I see in the show notes, something called letsencrypt.org.
Let's Encrypt is a service that's been around for not too long now, maybe a little less than a year. But they offer free SSL certificates for web servers. They're dead simple to set up. In fact, it's usually a couple of command line instructions on a machine to do it. And these are trusted certificates, so you don't have any certificate warning pop up when you try to go to the website that you've secured. The only thing they don't do is they don't verify your identity. They only encrypt the channel. So if you ever looked at SSL certificates, they typically serve two purposes. They encrypt the channel and they verify that who you're talking to is really who you're talking to.
Right.
This will do that encrypted channel, but it doesn't make sure that, you know, anyone can say, oh, I'm Bank of America or something like that. And if you don't check it, you don't know that for sure it's really Bank of America.
No, it's Let's Encrypt. Go ahead.
Oh, but for little home servers or little virtual private servers, it's a great option to be able to get SSL encryption without having to go through a big setup and without having to pay too much money.
Yeah. So is I didn't even go, I'm too lazy to even look this up, but is letsencrypt.org one of the Mozilla Foundation products, or is that something different?
I think it's a little bit different. I don't think it's Mozilla, but it is another nonprofit consortium of different groups that have gotten together to sponsor it.
And I think Google is like taking points off your search value if you don't have a SSL encryption turned on for your website these days.
Google is also very – so this is a story I had that I don't have in the show notes, but you might find interesting. Years ago when I was doing full-time server administration, it was when email first started getting locked down, where if you didn't have a, you know, SPF record and you didn't have all the other stuff for an email server, Google wouldn't deliver your messages anymore. It assumed that you were a spammer, et cetera. So that was kind of the first time that I thought, well, this is kind of draconian and annoying. Well, this week I went to one of my domains that's actually the domain I use for a lot of my home network and little projects and all that, and I got a Google malware warning when I went there. Turns out that one of my subdomains had a WordPress site that had gotten a injection of bad JavaScript in the header of the theme, which is, you know, pretty common.
That's happened to me.
I went in there, I cleaned it out, cleaned out everything else, ran a bunch of security scans, no problems, box is clean. I figure, well, Google will eventually rescan it and figure out that it's clean now and hopefully delist this. Because it wasn't just listing that subdomain, which would have been annoying but manageable. It was listing the root domain. So all the other sites that I go to that are whatever.whatever.net were all of a sudden getting the same malware warning. So finally, yesterday I realized, or 2 days ago I realized, yep, Google's not going to do this on its own. So I logged into the Google webmaster search tools or whatever and requested a re-review, and they re-reviewed it and it passed, and now my domain is clear again. But it's kind of an annoying thing. So the lesson learned, if you have a public-facing WordPress site, don't put it on the domain that you use for all of your you know, projects and things like that. Put it on a separate domain so that if this happens, you're not killing your own home network and such. And if you are using public-facing things, you might want them to have their own domains in case something like this happens instead of sharing any part. So subdomain's not as great. Although Let's Encrypt, going back to them, is saying that come January 2018, they will start issuing wildcard SSL certificates.
Oh, nice.
So you could have all of your subdomains encrypted.
Yeah. And, you know, this isn't a knock, I guess. So basically, and this isn't guarantee anything, but you just got to keep those self-hosted WordPress sites updated, which is a pain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or can be a pain. It's become less painful over the last couple of years, but I've had my site broken out, you know, after an update, and so you got to do the backups and restore and try again and fix stuff manually. Not fun. Which is why when I finally moved ogasawalrus.com, I moved it to medium.com, so I don't have to self-host anymore.
Yeah, I thought about that, but WordPress is the monster I know.
Yeah.
And so generally when it does have a problem, and as long as you keep it well patched, you know, you can go very long periods of time without any issue. But
that's true.
There are definitely, you definitely have to keep up with the patching and keep up with the updates. Keep up with all the updates, not just main WordPress, but plugins and themes.
Okay, well, I guess this is the start of the new MobileView's iPad Pro edition.
Yeah, that's really all we did talk about today.
And I suspect for the next couple of weeks, as we continue to be enamored with our new toy, we'll probably find more things to discuss. It's funny, you know, because most times you get an update or you get a new version or model of a phone or something. It's got some new features, so I know. And especially with the iPad, really, you know, I think I mentioned before, I didn't upgrade to the iPad Pro 9.7 for years, after years of using iPad 2, which came out in 2011.
Yep.
So I bought this 5 years between, and then now it's like 14 months, and I bought a new one because I thought this one was would make such a big difference to me, mostly in RAM, but turns out in lots of other ways too.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm actually, you joked earlier about now you're reading reviews because you care about them. One thing I'm actually much more interested in now than I was a month ago.
Yeah.
all the changes in iOS 11 for iPad.
Now that we can use it?
Yeah. Now that I can actually use it, I care a lot more about it than when it was, oh, well, I'll get some of that with my Air 2, and I'll get some of that with my Mini 3.
Yeah.
Now it's like, well, I'm going to get all of it because I've got the Pro. So.
Yeah, you've got the Cadillac. I should also note, you know, that, you know, we've talked about this last week, actually. We talked about games that we're going to lose and stuff, or have lost. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of lamenting that when I get my new iPad Pro, when people play Civilization Revolution, the original, the good one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, my daughter actually told me how to do this. It didn't even, you know, so when I buy a new phone or a new iPad, I always set up as a new device. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one since whenever, you know, my first iPhone was, or iPod Touch, really. And my daughter said, well, just restore it from your old one. I said, what? See, all the applications come over. What? Yeah, you know, so I said, really? So I manually backed up my iPad Pro 9.7, and I said, well, they'll probably restore it from the store, so it won't be able to grab the stuff it doesn't have. And I restored that configuration to my 10.5 iPad Pro, and lo and behold, Civilization Revolution is on my iPad Pro 10.5. So I was able to bring over my favorite game. Of course, it's going to stop running when iOS 11 hits it. So I'm still sad.
Yeah, that is the sad thing about it. But I've had similar things. I do restore the backups occasionally, but if it's a device I used for more than 2 or 3 years, I usually don't restore a backup because iOS can get kludgy, you know, cache files and all the same thing that Windows can get on occasion, macOS can get. So I do try to do new setups most of the time. But
yeah, well, for me, it was super important to be able to play Civilization Revolution. And so for the first time, I followed my daughter's advice and did that. And yep, my favorite game is alive until September, I guess. I can play it for another, 2 months or so. Until I
get we'll have a podcast of mourning when it goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like the spot watch.
I was going to say that. I was going to bring my spot watch out and look at it. And
yep.
Yeah.
The things that you've loved.
Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I need to find a new favorite game. And, you know, I've been playing this game since, 2010, when the iPad came out. So I haven't found a favorite game since then. So
well
see.
The game that I've been getting back into that I played briefly, have you ever played Threes?
No, I've never even heard of it.
It's a tile-moving game. Basically, you're combining tiles to get to the number 3.
Okay.
And that's been what I've been using lately to kind of game on and enjoy. So if you've never used it, you might want to check it out.
Nope. I have not used it, and I will check it out. Okay, and that brings to an end, as I said earlier, MoViews Podcast 212, the iPad Pro 10.5-inch edition. And we will talk to you next time. Bye.